bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African Music Mix plays only the best.
Yes, sir.
Tune in at 200, 300, 1200, and 1300 UTC GMT.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. I'm VOA's Andrew Palcheski in Washington. And for the next 2 weeks, I'll be filling in for Sonny Young while he's on a well-deserved vacation. But don't worry, the host may be different for now, but the show is still the same. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
The Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports.
The Sunny Side of Sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
We start today with golfer Henrik Stenson. The 40-year-old Swede was crowned the champion Sunday at the 145th Open Championships, also known as the British Open, in what many are calling one of the greatest final rounds in golf history. Stenson not only bested five-time major champion Phil Mickelson by 3 strokes overall, but ultimately scored a 20-under-par 63 in Sunday's final round. Now that ties a golf record for the lowest score in a final round of a major championship and breaks the previous Open record of 19 strokes under par, which was set 16 years ago by none other than 14-time major champ Tiger Woods. Stenson spoke about his first major win of his career just moments after raising the Open's Golf Champion Trophy, also known as the Claret Jug.
It hasn't quite sunk in yet, but I'm very happy, very proud of the way I played, and it was a great match with Phil. It seemed like it was going to be a two-horse race, and it was all the way to the end. I knew he wasn't going to back down at any point, and in a way that makes it easier for myself. I knew I had to keep on pushing, keep on giving myself birdie chances, and he wasn't going to give it to me, so I had to pull away, and just delighted that I managed to do that with a couple of birdies at the right time on the final stretch.
And even though he came in second, Phil Mickelson offered some high-quality praise for his high-quality competitor.
Gosh, disappointing to come in second, but I'm happy for Henrik. He's really a great champion. We've been friends for some time, and I've always thought that he is one of the best ball strikers in the game, and that major championships are perfectly suited for him. And I knew that he would ultimately come through and win. I'm happy that he did. I'm disappointed that it was at my expense.
Once again, congratulations to Henrik Stenson, your 2016 Open champion. Golf is also in the news because it's returning to the Olympics this year after a 112-year absence. It's one of two sports making a return to the games this year. The other, rugby, which is returning for the first time since the 1924 Olympics in Paris. With just 18 days until Rio 2016, here's a few more Olympic fun facts from our Tadi Abeje. The 2016 Olympics will be the first time in history that a South American country has hosted the Games. Previously, Brazil hosted the World Cup in 1950 and, of course, just 2 years ago in 2014. In both 1950 and 2014, the World Cup final matches were played in Rio's famed Maracanã Stadium. That 1950 final actually set a world record for the most fans ever to attend a soccer game. 199,854 people packed in to watch Uruguay beat Brazil 2-1. This year, Maracanã Stadium will hold both the opening and closing ceremonies for the Olympic and Paralympic Games. And as the countdown to the Olympic opening ceremonies continues, so too does the preparation. My VOA colleague Carol Castiel recently spoke with Sidney Levy. He's the CEO of the 2016 Olympic Organizing Committee. Over the next few days, we'll get an insider look from Levy at how those preparations are progressing and the numerous elements behind putting together the world's largest sporting event. And today, we journey from 7 years ago, when this complex process first kicked off, to today, when public health concerns over the Zika virus are grabbing headlines.
First of all, it's a pleasure to be here to talk to Voice of America. To organize the Games is a very large endeavor. It's a very complex organization where you have to deal with many different subjects at the same time. And in Rio, of course, we got into many other complications in this, what is already a complicated process. But we took a decision many years ago, which I think was a good decision, which is we split the organization into two areas. First area is what's legacy, what's going to stay for the city after the Games. And that's major is dealt with public resources. And the second part is how to organize the Games itself, which we're dealing with private resources. So we separated those two things. So with the private resources that I manage, we're dealing all the temporary installations, the transportation, the food, the accommodations for the athletes, the whole organization of the Games itself. And the public resources are into the public infrastructure. So when we decided to do the Games, the main question is why to do the Games? Huh? Why go into that such complicated effort? There's just one answer, is for what can the Games do for your city? That's what really the matter. And we decided to do a major transformation of the public transportation system in Rio de Janeiro. We decided that 7 years ago. And we went for that. We built new subway lines, highways, new trains, new light trains, new buses. The whole thing is changing dramatically. The number of people who use public transportation in Rio before the Games was 15% of the people. And now it's going to be 65% of the people. So that was dealt many years ago when we got the funds, mostly from government funds, to change the public mobility system in Rio de Janeiro. So because of that, we are not that affected by the political turmoil that we saw lately, because those are long-term projects that were dealt 7 years ago.
We're reading that there may not be enough time for a new transportation line to be actually up and running in time for the Games. What is the status of that?
The subway line just got the train on last Friday, so it's ready. It's going to be open for the Games. Got late because of problems funding and all, but also the Olympic Games also a lot of pressure into the political side of the society. So there is this willingness to solve those issues when they happen. So yes, the subway was late, but it's going to be ready. And we're in fact telling to everybody that the only way to go to the Games is through public transportation. You cannot take a car and go. You won't have parking spaces, won't have anything like that. You must take the new public transportation system. It's going to be inaugurated for the Games, and it's going to stay after the Games.
Sidney Levy, of course, there are many concerns about the Zika virus. Mm-hmm. Medical professionals recently sent an open letter to WHO, the World Health Organization, urging that the Rio Games even be canceled due to Zika. And now we see a number of athletes, including Irish golfer Rory McIlroy and even LeBron James, the NBA champion of the Cleveland Cavaliers, say that they're not going to Rio because of the fear of the Zika virus. How do you respond? And what impact will this have?
Of course, our commitment with this safety of the athletes and take care of the health of the athletes. So we're pretty sure this won't be a problem. Why? All the statistics show that in the winter months, the Zika mosquito doesn't proliferate because they naturally die in the winter.
And of course, this is winter.
This is winter. Rio just started. So it's going to be winter the whole period of time. And this is statistically proved that every year, the mosquitoes, they go up in January, February, and then starts going down in March, April, and by May, there's no... Today, I have 4,000 people working for myself in the fields, in the beaches, in the parks, in T-shirts, and I have not a single case of Zika. So we really think this is not a threat.
There's always a gap between, you know, facts on the ground mm-hmm. and perceptions. So mm-hmm. you still have this perception on the part of major athletes. Mm-hmm. How worried are you about mm-hmm. this trend, and what impact do you think it will have, that is, these high-profile withdrawals have on the Rio Games?
Well, there's 11,000 athletes coming to Brazil, the best athletes in the whole world. We had those two names, two out of 11,000. So we really don't think. And we also have a study from Cambridge University saying that the chance for getting Zika during August in Rio is 1 to 1 million. So we really think this is not a real issue. We think, of course, the games amplify whatever happens in your city because the public scrutiny, the amount of media attention that you get is overwhelming. And Zika, of course, it is a public health problem. But I'm sure, for example, today we have more cases in Florida than in Rio, simply because it's summer mm-hmm. in Florida and it's winter in Rio.
What specifically is being done to ensure the health of those who are coming to Rio, notwithstanding, as you said, mm-hmm. the winter months and mm-hmm. that the incidence or the probability mm-hmm. is so low? But I think people will feel better if they know what mm-hmm. measures are being put in place.
We started to fumigate the areas with repellents, the village and the park, some months ago. We're going to keep doing this, of course, during the period of the game. But overall, we think we have much bigger issues than that.
Such as? since you brought it up.
Well, there's the whole transportation, how to transport all these people. The whole security issue is very strong. We receive a lot of people. So these are much higher on our priority list than the Zika. Although Zika probably takes more time in the press and in the media, for us, it's not top in the priority.
Stay tuned for tomorrow, and we'll have part two of our interview with Sidney Levy when we delve into how the organizing committee plans to keep the games safe. If you're just joining us, I'm Andrew Palcheski in Washington, sitting in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Facilities, transportation, health and safety, they're all important parts of a successful Olympics. But there's one critical element that we haven't talked about, the one thing you really need for an Olympic Games, the athletes. They're also getting ready, training for that moment in the global arena. Sora Halake reports, attended the U.S. Olympic Committee's pre-Olympics press briefing last week, and he reports that the excitement is growing among U.S. athletes set to compete in Rio.
After 6 years of intense and exhausting trainings that led to broken bones, torn calves, degenerated Achilles, it is that time of the year where all roads are leading to Rio de Janeiro, bringing together the star athletes of the world. For new faces, it is a breakthrough in sport where the dream comes true. Hundreds of thousands of sports fans, more than 10,000 of finest athletes tested by years of training would emerge for this year's Summer Olympic Games. Let the craziness of the year starts. Under tight security, delayed construction, doping issues, and fears of Zika, Summer Olympic is counting down to its 16 days in the Maracana Stadium. A total of 10,500 world-class athletes will converge on Rio to showcase their Olympic-built and shaped bodies at the game that runs from August 5th to the 21st of 2016. Athletes from 207 countries and territories are expected to attend, battling on 29 sports. America is poised for a big haul, lining up 552 athletes of which 500-plus have already secured their spots. For U.S. Olympic Committee and U.S. team, the excitement is up in the air as the committee has declared hashtag We Love Rio program. Here is Scott Blackham, CEO of U.S. Olympic Committee.
I expect we'll have about 552 total when we're all said and done in the middle of July. Just a whole bunch of young, talented athletes that have qualified through their sports that will bring, you know, real diversity of experience and of energy.
In swimming, a sport U.S. owns, medal expectation is high. Its top swimming athlete, Michael Phelps, who won a total of 22 medals, 18 of them gold, on three Olympic Games, is also joining the squad. For the 31-year-old athlete who called it quit after Beijing Olympic, this is his fifth trip to the Olympic pool after serving 6 months ban for drinking under influence.
If you're ever in the Olympic Village, it's one of the happiest times. Everyone's, you know, it's a dream come true for everybody, and you know, not only for the athletes, but you know, I think every individual country is behind their athletes, and it's a happy time for everybody.
And of course, it is the happiest time, but there are so many concerns leading to this year's Olympic. Protest, transportation madness, corruption, doping issues are some of the challenges that the host country will be dealing with. When pressed, if he was certain that U.S. team and its sporting families will be safe at the Games, this is what U.S. Olympic Committee Chief of Sport Performance Alan Ashley has to say.
I feel very, very good about headed down to Rio. I can't wait to go, and every single member of my immediate family is coming with me.
U.S. is bringing new and familiar faces. 52-year-old Bessie Madden, who is making her fifth trip to the game for her fourth show jumping, the oldest among Team USA, while 18-year-old Vashtile Kanning is the youngest athlete to qualify for U.S. track and field. As the South America country is getting ready to host its first Olympic Games, participating athletes are vying to showcase their talents and skills at the Olympic field for themselves and for the nation. But for U.S. city L.A., a city famed as the center of nation's film industry, the bid to host 2024 Summer Olympic is getting bigger, bidding with other four finalists, Budapest, Hungary, Hamburg, Paris, and Rome. Sora Halake, VOA News, Washington.
Joining us today on the Sunny Side of Sports with a look at what's trending in the sports world is VOA's Dan Friedel. Sporty greetings, Dan.
Hi, Andrew. Nice to be here. It's a little bit different than having the sunny man in the big chair.
It is. It's different for me, too. It's, you know, I'm not quite as tall as Sunny for one thing. I perhaps have a little more hair on the top of my head, but no, I'm just kidding. I hope he's having a good vacation, but you're here to talk about trends. So what's trending in the sports world?
The big news today is the status of the Russian Olympic team for the games coming up in August. Just about 3 weeks from now, we're expecting to see all of the teams march in to the Maracanã Stadium for the opening ceremony. And the question is, will there be any Russian athletes in the stadium?
And there's a good chance there may not be after this report. And something that I saw was it said it wasn't just state-sponsored, but state-dictated. Strong words.
Well, there's no doubt that the Olympics are a source of pride for many nations. And I was just looking at the Wikipedia medal tables for the modern Olympics. Between the Soviet Union and Russia over about the last 100 years, athletes from those countries have won thousands of Olympic medals. And the Russian team in recent years has done very well. Some of the commentary that I've seen on Twitter is related to Russia feeling disappointed with their performance at the 2010 games in Vancouver when a lot of Canadian athletes did well. The Russian program apparently stepped it up so that they would have good results on their home soil in Sochi in 2014, and it seems like they succeeded, but through nefarious methods.
So it looks like it all started in 2010. But so what is Twitter saying about this otherwise, other than kind of the timeline and trying to unpack this? What are people saying looking forward? Are they hopeful that Russia's banned? Are they hoping that they make it?
Well, it'll be an interesting statement. I mean, the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, is one of those organizations. Maybe some would compare it to FIFA in the sense that it's kind of impenetrable. We don't really know what happens behind the curtain during those meetings. The question is really, is the IOC going to come down hard on Russia? If you remember, in late 2015, the International Athletics Association, the organization that governs all the major track and field events in the world, banned the Russian team from competing in 2016. And then they would have the power to specifically ban the Russian track and field team from competing in the Olympics. But now the question is the IOC going to drop the hammer and ban the entire Russian team? People are saying that the document and the investigation that came out this morning from Richard McLaren, who's a Canadian ethicist and lawyer, is so damaging that it now elevates Russia above Lance Armstrong as far as the most hated dopers in history.
Oof, that's not a good place to be, especially when we're just 18 days away from Rio. And as you mentioned, it was with this athletics program that a lot of this doping was happening, but the potential now for all Russian athletes to be banned, and that could have an impact on other events. Gymnastics, for one. I know Maria Sharapova out of tennis on her own doping charges, but I know the Russians have been competitive in something like gymnastics.
Yeah, there was a graph that was posted. Images of the graph were posted on Twitter, and athletics, track and field was the number one sport. And then below that, the next sport was actually weightlifting, where the most tainted samples came from. And then down the list, actually, Paralympic athletes were third, which is kind of surprising.
Wow.
But yeah, you know, there was some discussion that some individual Russian athletes were going to be able to get kind of a waiver that they would be able to compete in the Olympics on their own under some kind of IOC flag or some sort of secondary classification if they were able to prove that they were not willingly involved in doping and that, you know, they were clean themselves. But basically, it seems like it's a needle in the haystack kind of situation if you're trying to find one clean Russian athlete. I mean, it's sad for some athletes who probably have competed clean in their careers and still done well, but it's basically impossible to find out, you know, one or two good apples in the bunch when the whole bunch seems to be spoiled. It's kind of the inverse of the typical sayings that we have for that sort of thing. But yeah, this next part of the story is that Tuesday, the IOC is going to meet to discuss the latest World Anti-Doping Report, which came out today. So I don't know. I think at this point it's probably 50-50 that there might be some kind of severe punishment against the Russian Olympic organization.
And do you think people would be unhappy about that? Do you think it would make it maybe less competitive? Or do you think people are saying, good, get them out of there if they're doping?
Well, if you remember, 1984 was the last Summer Olympics that didn't have a Russian/Soviet Union team. And the American athletes basically cleaned up every major medal. And you go back and you look at history, right? You know, you look at that 32 years ago and you say 1984, it was this big celebration of the American sports machine. It was really ramping up in those days. I mean, if you think about it, the mid-80s is really when the sports culture in the U.S. became as big as it is, you know, started to head in that direction. And a lot of the impetus was the success in the 84 Summer Games. But you look back on it and you say, well, were those athletes the best of the best that won medals, or that they just took advantage of a favorable situation? So I think if you asked an athlete, they would want to go up against the best competition they can. So without Russia, it won't be the same Olympics for sure.
And we will see for sure in 18 days. Well, thank you very much, Dan Friedel. That wraps up the July 18th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Kwame Ofori, VOA engineer John Dryden, and thank all of you out there in Radio Land for tuning in. I'm VOA's Andrew Palcheski in Washington, filling in for Sonny Young, and that's The Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On July 9th, the fifth anniversary of South Sudan's independence passed without celebration. Instead, the capital city, Juba, was consumed with renewed fighting between rival factions, which escalated into violence reminiscent of the country's civil war and raised fears for the country's increasingly fragile peace. In December 2013, a power struggle between President Salva Kiir and Vice President Riek Machar escalated into a civil war. Fighting reopened ethnic fault lines between Kiir's Dinka and Machar's Nuer ethnic groups. Some reports indicate up to 50,000 people have been killed and more than 2.2 million driven from their homes, with many fleeing to neighboring states. Finally, last August, both Salva Kiir and Riek Machar signed a peace agreement to end the devastating conflict. The agreement confirmed Salva Kiir as president and Riek Machar returned to government as the first vice president. The agreement provided for a transitional government of national unity. In late April, Riek Machar arrived in Juba and was sworn in as first vice president. It seemed South Sudan was finally turning a corner. The sudden eruption of violence in recent days, in addition to the tragedy of more lives lost and more people displaced, has cast a deep shadow over the prospects for lasting peace under the agreement. The United States and the rest of the world have called for all sides to abide by the ceasefire declared on July 11th and allow the security situation to stabilize. United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said, "Yet again, the leaders of South Sudan have failed their people. Rarely has a country's conduct squandered so much promise so quickly." The United Nations Security Council, the African Union, and regional partners have been actively engaged in calling on the leaders in South Sudan to commit to the full and immediate implementation of the peace agreement, including the permanent ceasefire, said State Department spokesperson John Kirby. The United States strongly urges that the two leaders do everything in their power to ensure these decrees will be fully respected and unfettered humanitarian assistance will be provided to those affected by the violence.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Tuesday on Health Chat, host Lenore Modou takes a look at HIV, AIDS, challenges, and progress made to combat the disease. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa. Next on Let's Talk, the marathon. Do you know where the name for the race came from? Have you ever participated in one? Join host Sunday Shumari and his guests discussing marathon. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa. Next time on Straight Talk Africa, Chaka Sali and his guests will discuss the Republican National Convention and what a Republican presidency could mean for Africa. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 1830 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
VOA News is always at the tip of your fingers.
All the news you want about Africa and the world, day and night, is available on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
Make it your first source of news and information.